And welcome to Down the Alley. This is PMAC.
And I'm Ted T.S. Spirides.
And we got big things coming to you. I'm not gonna drop the name yet, but how's it going today?
It's good. Got to coach and we'll see what happens, but it's like 55 degrees outside.
It's weirdly nice outside. I thought we were gonna have a white Thanksgiving, and a for sure, white Christmas. And, right now as of, Thursday at 9 PM, I don't know if we're gonna have a white, a white Thanksgiving. At least it might be nice. I don't know. Is it going to be a nice Thanksgiving week for us?
I'll be honest. I have not looked at the forecast, but, I think I saw something that there's a snowstorm coming.
Ooh, maybe Sunday? I'm seeing 60% chance of snow. Is that what?
Yeah.
Not to get too weatherman on us, and by the time this drops, it's going to be, maybe we're in the middle of a snowstorm. Could when this 70. Actually drops. To kind of dive into, a couple, current news, Kirk Cousins, 2020, kind of defying all odds. Wins a Monday Night Football game.
It's a 2020 thing. If there's heavy favorite one way, go the other way, bet the other way, fade the public this year,
put the mortgage down on that.
It doesn't surprise me that, he got a win in 2020 on Monday Night Football after all that's happened. Vikings fans, I consider myself a Viking fan. I want them to win. I don't like when they lose, but yep. I'm not diehard. My Monday isn't ruined or my Tuesday isn't ruined if they lose.
Sure. Okay.
But it's funny how 2 weeks ago, everybody is like, this is the worst team ever. I'm not even a fan anymore. I'm not watching anymore. And they tried everything they could to lose that game to the Bears. It was we gave up, it's a block punt, a kick return, a missed extra point, interceptions. We scored, 19 points on a good defense, but even a good defense with the way that offense was playing against us, and it's still the Bears had the ball with a chance to win at the end of the game. It wasn't man, we went in there and smacked them. And now everybody's this is a playoff team and blah, blah, blah. Oh my God.
We got momentum. We got a little bit of momentum.
And it is fun to see them be better. A couple weeks ago, I was there's no way they're a Super Bowl contender. So let's just lose and try to get a, decent option at a draft pick, whether it's a quarterback or not. The higher pick you have, the more chance you have of getting the person that you want.
Yeah.
Because it's to go 8-8 or to even if they go 10-6 and get a wild card, are they going to really be able, even if they're playing their best, are they going to be able to compete with some of the top teams? I don't know, but this isn't a football podcast, but it was nice, for Kirk to get his win and tried everything we could to lose that game. But luckily for him, it's 2020 and he got bailed out.
Yeah. No, anything can happen. And, to kind of kick it back to lacrosse, I think you saw this. I glanced over it, saw something quick. I believe it was the Olympics.
Yep.
For lacrosse.
Yeah, they posted
what's kind of going on there?
Their rules. I didn't dive too deep into it, but it seemed pretty controversial that they're doing sort of a hybrid model of lacrosse. So it's not full field, nine players and a goalie, and it's not box in a rink 5-on-5. It's modified field 6-on-6. So it's 5-on-5 plus a goalie, I think, or maybe it's 6-on-6 with a goalie.
Something like that.
Funny thing, we actually, the second year we were in business, before we even had Team 36, we ran a 6-on-6, cross field league.
Okay.
It was kind of just everybody just sign up, individually. We put you in teams and you're playing pickup 6-on-6, cross field. So it's exactly what the Olympics is now. So it's kind of funny to see that, but some people are pretty upset about it in the sense of you're too much change, either do box or do field, but don't go in the middle.
That was the big thing that I saw when I was looking quick is, you know, if you're going to bring it so far away from traditional field, and so it's pretty close to box, like why not just go box then?
Yeah.
Or go box winter and then, you know, Winter Olympics and then go field summer,
yeah, that'd be cool.
Or something like that.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess I don't really care. It'll be cool to just see it in the Olympics and it's another, you know, option. And I don't know. It could be cool. It could suck. I mean, like I could see both sides. Yeah. I'm not too worked up about it, but you know, a couple of people are like, this is basically Jenny drill.
There's no face-offs, right? Yeah. There's one face-off.
So they're like, I don't know why they're doing that. They're like chopping it up so much. It's like, do you want it to be a basketball game? Do you want it to be a lacrosse game?
Well,
it's,
girls, the women's did something like that where it was really basketball-y.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was the world championships or maybe it was like the Olympics or something, but I remember seeing that a handful of years ago.
Yeah. It's like we do that at practice because we're like, hey, you know, I don't need to work on 37 face-offs.
Right.
You know, sometimes we might have to, but
yeah,
I would rather work on riding and clearing. So, hey, if the white team scores, blue team, just clear it, you know, clear and ride. Yeah, so let's get a clear and ride situation. But
sure,
if you're playing a real game, it seems kind of weird to not like go to a face-off or a draw every time, but I don't know.
There's a loud group of people that, you know, want to eliminate the face-off, and I am not part of that group, and I like the face-off. And again, it's like, okay, if a face-off guy has a big, you know, role in that game, you know, get a better faceoff guy.
Figure it out.
If a goalie, like, are we going to turn into basketball? Like, if the goalies get too good, are we going to get rid of the goalies?
Well, that's the thing. You know? It's just like,
I don't know.
Why is the rule change always to like get rid of it? You know, like, right. I don't like that a guy shoots overhand and scores every time, so we're not allowing that anymore. It's just like, it doesn't have to be black and white all the time. It could, you know, faceoffs, they have kind of tweaked rules and we'll see. But anyway, yeah, Olympics, kind of a modified version, and I'll give it a chance, you know, like I'll watch it and then I'll assess. I won't be like, this is terrible or this is great before I see it.
We'll give it a shot.
And, you know, we in the, like the greater we of like the lacrosse community, like as a whole, has been begging for more exposure to the game.
We need it.
Forever. Yeah. And so, you know what, if this is what we get, then make it really good.
Yeah.
You know, and watching the best players in the world play, you know, basically Jenny drill for an hour, like, could be sweet. Like, it could actually be exciting. Who knows? I vowed to you to not talk about COVID and coronavirus on this podcast anymore.
Yep.
Because we all understand it sucks. And this is not the place for
this. This is not a corona podcast.
Please don't take this as a COVID related topic, but with some of the shutdowns of high school sports, they are allowing college and professional sports to continue, you know, kind of across the country.
Yep.
And the reason that I saw was that there was testing capacity or like procedures in place that allowed them to manage the situation a little bit better than maybe a high school or a youth program.
Yep.
So that might be positive upward trending news on the, you know, the likelihood of a 2021 season happening.
Yeah. I actually, you know, received an email, you know, some guidance and some updates and testing, more testing has continuously gotten better throughout the year and more available throughout the year, as we've seen. And with that, you know, yes, you know, hopefully college sports, I don't know how professional sports, but what I'm hearing college wise is college sports are going to be able to happen, you know, even with, you know, what's going on right now. But it's going to be, you know, everyone's getting tested, 3 times a week, players and, you know, coaching staff wise, like if you want, you know, to keep your team going, which, you know, on face value is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, if you're able to, you know, get those testing and get that done and no outbreaks and everything, you know, hopefully you can, you know, continue to have that season. But if you dive, you know, not to be a Debbie Downer, you know, this testing isn't cheap. you know, each test is, I believe, is $150 a test. So, you know, if you're getting three tests per person a week, you know, over, you know,
12 weeks,
if that's how long your season is, you know, some colleges are going to be able to afford that. You know, maybe your big time, your big time football teams can, you know, afford that. Yeah. You know, maybe some hockey.
Is
maybe the top 20 in lacrosse, but
is the three tests a week like an NCAA standard, or is that a lacrosse standard?
I believe that's, don't quote me. This is still new, getting rolled out. I believe it's NCAA.
I have heard that. I think football's doing that. Okay. So, but yeah, that does then raise the question of, okay, there's that cost benefit analysis of,
right,
we're spending X dollars, but to have our football team playing it out, you know, we're still in the black, or like, at least we're going to offset that cost. But,
right,
you know, a lacrosse team or a rowing team or a golf team or whatever,
yeah,
it's like, I don't know about that. And I mean, a roster of 17 or 18 guys, maybe not horrible, but what if you're a Division III team with 50?
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of money. And I mean, I've seen a lacrosse budget, a Division III sports lacrosse budget.
Yeah.
You've seen one.
I'm trying to work with one.
I've never seen a Division I lacrosse budget. But I don't think it's like insanely more. Like, it's not millions of dollars more.
It's, yeah, I, you know, again, I don't know. You know, there's different levels of boosters.
Yeah,
there's,
I mean, different levels of
fundraising,
school.
You know. You know, I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, what different programs are working with. But, you know, these testing, you know, that's gonna be a dent in any budget.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Well, you know, hopefully we see lacrosse this spring. I mean, that's end of story.
That's the goal. Yeah, absolutely.
And whether that's, you know, in colleges being able to deal with the testing, you know, at worst case scenario, we get to see PLL bubble again.
Right.
Because they've kind of figured out that it worked and, you know, that model's working.
Yeah. I think with sports, you know, with professional sports, If they can bubble, or if they can, you know, control the environment as much as they can,
yeah,
I think they have a good chance of succeeding and being able to,
yeah,
you know, because they're getting that revenue, you know, and like you said, college football, they're revenueing dollars, yeah, it's a business,
yeah, and that it's tough to think about, you know, the potential for high school sports, because I mean, they don't even want to put the shot clock in high school because schools can't afford shot clocks.
Right.
And shot clocks aren't cheap. They're, you know, $500-$700 each. You need two of them.
Yeah.
But they're way cheaper than three tests a day per guy.
Right.
Or three tests a week per guy. Yeah. In your program, you know, of even 20 to 40 guys gals.
Yeah. And
you so know, like that's, if that's going to be like a requirement, like there's no way like a high school could do that.
No, there's no way. But, you know, with high schools, you know, those kids have even less of a chance of having, you know,
because they're not traveling out of state and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. It's more controlled location wise and just health wise. I think, you know, most high school age kids.
And it does put some accountability on the athletes and the coaches then to be like, we have a system in place. It's black and white. You either test negative or you test positive. And you can, of course, you can do everything right and still get it, right? But like, if your team really wants to play, they can really take steps to, during the season, like limit their, you know, risk and the things that they're doing outside of practice or whatever. And I like that. I like that it gives them a choice, you know, the choice to say, you know, of the things they want to do and not do if they want to play or not.
I think this is going to be a major development on, you know, college and pro for sure. But, you know,
yeah,
if they're going to force high schools or younger youth like to test this much to be able to play,
I know I promised that this is a corona free podcast, but it kind of tied into just sports and college lacrosse. So, and even high school lacrosse. So, that's the end of that.
On a positive note, we have a fantastic two guests. Have we had a two guester?
I don't think we've ever had a dual guest.
So
show.
We have a dual guest.
We've had four people because Katie has been here. Sure. So it's like three hosts and a guest.
Yep.
But we've never had a 2v2.
So we were playing a little man coverage.
Yep.
And with this, so first time two guest show and first time we'll be on YouTube.
Yes.
We Zoomed. So yep. We recorded the Zoom. And with that, the audio, as some of you might be listening to right now, right? We're launching everything on, you know, all the podcasts.
Going all in.
And then we're going all in. We are giving you video, and hopefully we'll be able to do that, you know, every episode moving forward. I'm going to try to promise you that.
Yeah, because some people like the video format. Like some, like, I know sometimes I listen to podcasts in my car, which I'm obviously not on YouTube, but a lot of times I personally consume podcasts via video on YouTube if I'm laying in bed or whatever.
Sure.
So hopefully that gives people another chance, another opportunity. But back to our guests.
Yes.
This is, to have both of these guys at the same time was really cool.
Yep.
Rob Horn and Sean Klemsrud, head coach, assistant coach of Benilde St. Margaret. Both have been, they've just been Minnesota lacrosse guys forever.
Yeah.
Super experienced coaches, super knowledgeable on recruiting and just lacrosse, but like
program building,
have really interesting backgrounds, different personalities, which is cool to see. Like, obviously they're a successful program, and in the episode, you're going to see why they've had a successful program.
Yeah.
It's like apparently clear. I was really interested in what they had to say about just their, some of the things that they do in their process. And, and I told you after the podcast, I was kind of like, man, like I can see why people want to play there.
Yeah.
There's just a commitment to the program. And I appreciate them sharing some of that stuff with us. You know, it's easy to just keep kind of close to the vest.
Yeah.
But
I was digging. I was trying to open up the doors a little bit, for the fans.
But it was great to get him on. We had Horn lined up, like, right before everything shut down back in the spring. Because he was going to come on and talk about, you know, the season preview.
Right, yep.
And so
we're starting to
We kind of had to, he was going to come in studio, do everything. And then it was just like, hey, like, we just got to table this. And, like, obviously we all had a bunch of stuff to deal with in the summer or whatever. But really pumped that he was able to come on. And then Sean actually like got it initiated.
Yeah. Okay.
Cause he was like, hey, like I heard you had Nick Midbo on from Blake, we need to have some airtime for Benilde. I was like, hey, guess what? We are open to all down the alley.
I haven't said no to anybody, if they want to come on, we've had a variety of different people, coaches, players, non-lacrosse people. So, I'm not gonna shut them down.
Yeah. Yeah. I've talked enough. I think our listeners are going to really like this episode.
Yeah. And if you want to check it out on YouTube, if you're interested in this video formatting, it's going to be on 36 Lacrosse, the 36 Lacrosse YouTube page, subscribe, follow, all that good stuff.
And we're tweaking and learning kind of some of the system, kind of the production of it. We're lacrosse coaches. We're not technical guys, but figuring out some of the video and audio, and to try to make it, somewhat professional.
Yeah. We're doing our best. Yeah. So, bear with us this first week. And I think every week, we're going to keep getting better, with the video stuff, cause this is a little bit new to us, and, excited to, get on YouTube, keep adding and expanding our kind of, our technology and where we're, able to get to. And, excited to, get these guys on. And I think our viewers are going to love it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll shoot it over to the interview.
Well, yeah, guys, it's, I appreciate you coming on. Sean, I don't know if Rob got the backstory, but Sean heard the podcast with Nick Midbo and was like, well, we can't let Blake have all this free airtime. So you know, I got to get on and at least drop the vanilla. And I was like, hey, we're school agnostic here. So, you know, we want people coming on. So how are you guys doing? Are you obviously working remotely, I would assume, at this point?
Yeah, remote every day. It's been a little chaotic around here, obviously, but, you know, we're doing what we can as best we can daily.
And so how old is your son?
My guy is 5 months, will be 6 months, 1st of December.
And Sean?
Mine is 4.5 months. So funny thing about Rob is we always try to do things together. Whether it be work together, coach together, or have kids together.
Well, good luck in April 1st, right? You guys are going to save up now. So the wives, you're going to have to pay for a nice piece of jewelry or something like that. come the end of the season, you know, but, you know, obviously you guys have kind of listened to our podcast, and we just try to get coaches on, try to get lacrosse people on and just, you know, mm-hmm. have conversations, and we can kind of take this wherever you want. But I think kind of the thing we always ask everybody first is sort of, you know, how did you find lacrosse? And you know, it's so many people here and everywhere. It's just, you're never like, well, you know, I had a stick in my hand day one and whatever. It always seems to be like a weird story. And maybe you guys did have your stick day one. But how did you guys get started in the game?
Sean, you want to go first?
Yeah, certainly. So I was a baseball player up until like 9th grade. Oh. And I didn't pick up a stick until the year 2000, which looking back is 20 years ago. just let me borrow a stick. He said like we were having tryouts, like just a little like fall play day kind of thing. Went out there, got hooked, and just haven't looked back since.
Yeah. For me, I moved to Ranelagh growing up. So I was always playing, you know, your more traditional sports, you know, football, baseball, you know, tried a little bit of soccer. And then when I hit my high school age in Ohio, there's two paths for you in the state of Ohio. You're either a really good high school football player or you're a terrible high school football player and you have to go find something else to do. So my freshman year, I was a terrible backup field goal kicker. So I picked up a stick. One of my teammates on the football team said, hey, you're not too good at this football thing. Why don't you come play lacrosse with us instead? And I was like, at a new school, wanted to make friends. I was like, awesome. So I literally got online and started ordering the most expensive stuff I could find. I thought that's what you had to do. Sure enough, I bought the very first Edge, and I was walking around my house cradling. And I didn't even like extend the leathers of the pocket, so it looked like a girl stick. And I was walking around like, oh, yeah, I can do this. I showed up at practice the first day without a pocket. Everybody just laughed. But I got hooked.
Yeah.
It was just it was a camaraderie, having some instant friends, you know, at a new school. So that's kind of how I got into the game.
So where in Ohio are you from? I played with a guy that went to Moeller. I was actually my freshman roommate. And then I don't know where Turnbull's from, like Columbus area.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a Columbus guy. So yeah, I grew up in Hilliard. Okay. I spent my high school years at Hilliard. And right there in Columbus.
Public or private?
Public.
Okay.
Yeah, and when I was actually in high school, we actually split schools, right? So the school got so big. So, you know, like very similar to the Bloomington area where they have two high schools in a small area. Now they have three high schools back there. But, yeah, that's kind of how I jumped into it.
You guys played through high school and both played in college. So, Sean, where did you play?
So I played club lacrosse up at the St. Cloud State University.
Yeah, that's so. And then Rob?
Yeah, so I took a little bit of a different path to Minnesota. I started off going to Wheeling Jesuit University, a small D2 school, you know, right outside of Pittsburgh, PA. Bear Davis, right? The Ohio Machine former head coach was my college head coach, and he was actually from my same hometown. So he was a Hilliard alum, so he was like, Rob, you got to come. You know, so I went there for a couple years, and then my parents relocated to Minnesota when I was finishing up my high school years. You know, some family health scenarios that ended up, you know, bringing me back up this way. And I had no idea what the weather was like in this state. I just said, you know, I had a great conversation with Coach Graff when I was starting to pursue, you know, where I'm going to transfer to him. and within the state. And he's like, you know, you got to come up to Duluth. You got to check it out. I never even, like, I applied, I got in. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know what the weather was going to be like when I went up there. Nothing, you know? And I just said, yeah, sure, let's go. You know, I had my major, a really good poli-sci major, and Paul Sharp up there was the chair. And I had a great conversation with him. And I was like, yep, I'm at Duluth, you know? And obviously I spent quite a couple years up there and I had a great time playing the club.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. And something I remember about you, and you probably knew I was going to bring this up. You, every time you had to come up, you were coaching when I was there. Every time you came up, you were just like, hey, can I sleep on your couch so I don't have to get a hotel room? We're like, yeah, that's fine. And you're like, I'll make dinner. And it was always a Stouffer's lasagna. And it always tasted so good after those long weekends. And it's just, so it's always like, yep, Horn's coming to bring lasagna. And we're just like, yeah, they can sleep on the couch. I don't care. You know, no different than any other night having somebody sleep on your couch in college, right? So that was always fun to have you up there, so.
Yeah, no, and that's a great, those are great memories.
Yeah.
It's so funny to talk about it. And you know, some of you guys that I coached during that time is, you know, some of my closest friends now,
yeah.
You know, and from sleeping on this couch, established those relationships, taking care of you guys, you know, that was my whole mantra when I was doing that up there is like, I wanted to be a resource for you, not just on the field, but if we could spend some time together and get to know each other at a personal level that, you know, these type of relationships foster.
Yeah. Time. Yeah, it is hard to believe, like Sean said, it's like you're looking back, you're like 20 years ago now, and you know, how many, you know, summer tourney fields have you been on? How many sweating spring games with rain pelting in your face have you coached in? I mean, it's just like you kind of get there and it's like, holy crap, you know, we've been doing this for a while. But you know, how did you guys get into coaching? Obviously, Rob kind of touched on it a little bit with his Duluth, but Sean, how did you start coaching? Like, what's your path?
Yeah, so when I was up at St. Cloud State, we had like a player coach by the name of Joe Granis, who was also the coach at St. Cloud Tech High School.
Okay.
So during the spring, he needed extra help. He just needed extra hands. So he just like, hey, Sean, you want to come out to a couple of practices? So I started working with the JV team there. And then that summer, a good friend of mine, Eric Bohr, offered me like a defensive coordinator role for a 7-8 team in the Champlain Park Youth Lacrosse Association. And then I started coaching there. And then from there, I kind of bounced around a little bit. I went to, after St. Cloud and the youth ball, I basically went to a very small school in Mendota Heights. It's a small private school called the Trinity School at River Ridge. Mm. They were an MBSLA program when, you know, the MBSLA was still around. And then the same buddy, Eric Bohr, who hired me to be his defensive coordinator in youth ball, hired me to be his defensive coordinator at Champlain Park. So I was an assistant coach for 4 years there, head coach for one. And then it was basically the summer before I got married. And I was like, all right, I'm going to step back. The commute to Champlain Park from Minneapolis was just too much.
Yeah.
And I was going to take a year off, but then Rob called me and said, I have this position open at Vanilla St. Margaret's. I'm taking the head coach job. And I couldn't say no.
Yeah. That's like the coaching curse. It's like the day you're like, I'm done coaching. Someone's like, hey, I just took a new job and I need somebody. I'll let Rob kind of continue on then. So you were at Duluth, obviously helping there. And then I, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have to tell you this because I don't think a lot of people realize, like, one, I'm not going to tell people how long I have been coaching because I don't want people to know how old I really am as part of this this discussion this evening.
Yeah, you're like the young players coach, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it swept under the rug. But it was really funny is, you know, those years that I was coming up here, maybe I was still in college at Jesuit, or I started coaching youth association ball. When my parents had a place in Plymouth, I started coaching my brother's team at fourth, fifth grade, right? The Plymouth Youth Association. I met this guy named Mark Halinek. I was like, hey, I'm running this youth league. You know, I'm like, okay, yeah. He saw me shooting out a field in Hopkins. He's like, you want to coach this team in Plymouth? I was like, I'll only coach the team if my brother could be the goalie. And they're like, okay, yeah, sure. You know, we'll take care of it. So I ended up coaching this team. And little did I know, like all these kids that I was coaching at that age is, and then potentially coaching against were all these kids that I'd end up coaching in high school, you know, I had like Eric Fong, I had the Fong brothers, you know, the Ordways,
yeah.
David Terse, you know, and so I got started doing it at the youth level here. And I really just enjoyed it. And of course the youth level then was definitely not as, you know, robust or as, you know, just laid out from an YLM level. You know, we didn't really even have that back then. It was more true town, like baseball association type of lacrosse. But we had a great time doing it. And then, when I was, you know, finishing up at Duluth, I was still up there. You know, I finished playing and, you know, Coach Graf and I had a conversation and I was just like, look, it was the most awkward conversation I've ever had with somebody, you know, who was a friend and a mentor for me, where I could say, can I continue to keep coaching with you? I had to like kind of ask him, but also knowing that he might say no, just knowing that I was a year removed from the team and I was still living up there. He's like, oh yeah, of course, you know, we'd love to have you on board. So that was a good process for me. But to get starting coaching at high school, Coach Clark was also on staff with us at that time, up at Duluth, and he was actually coaching down in the cities at Benilde. So during my senior year of college, I actually transferred from UMD back home to go to the U of M so I could start coaching as a varsity assistant coach with Coach Clark at Benilde St. Margaret. And that was obviously still during the MBSLA days.
Yeah.
It was a very diverse group of talent. And, you know, we lost during my years there. I think I had Kitzel end our run 1 year, and Nesser and those guys when they were at Tutina with Coach Hoban. And then obviously we ran into a couple of very, very strong Blake teams during those times. But that's kind of how I just had a passion for it. I knew I wanted to be around the kids. I loved the game. And I was really grateful, you know, that Coach Clark reached out and said, hey, Rob, come down, you know, met with Jerry. You know, my AD then is still my AD now. It's kind of came full circle. So that's how I got started here in Minnesota.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, that kind of leads, we want to kind of get, you know, now since we have, you know, you guys are on staff at Benilde, you know, we kind of want what I call like maybe a state of the union of Benilde, let you guys talk about your team a little bit. You know, I have some specific questions. I don't know if PMAC does too, but just, you know, just kind of give us like, you know, your feelings on the team heading into spring of, you know, 2021.
Last year was tough, not for everybody, you know, not just us at Benilde, but across the state as a whole. You know, it was really, you know, a difficult situation to kind of work with a group of kids for a very long time and never really even got to send them out the way that, you know, we felt that they deserved to go out. You know, we never even got to blow a whistle last year, blow a ball out, you know? So that was a difficult feeling. And then even going back into the summer, when we started, you know, to get the restrictions lifted and we could start to gather and start to run some practices and trainings, you know, it took me days, you know, I was still like, screaming over my shoulder, like, you know, Buds, get them going because Buds isn't there anymore, you know? So that's kind of been, you know, just for me from a mental side of kind of remembering that the 20s are gone, you know, it's a new group. But this year's group, you know, we're young, we're Spitfires. I think, you know, from a depth chart standpoint, we have a lot of talent. It's just not trying to figure out where all the pieces fit. You know, you lost a full year of development with your younger players. You know, getting them into your systems, spending that time with them, really getting them ramped up. So those players that are, you know, might be sophomores now or juniors, to me, they still look a year back because I haven't had that year with them. But, you know, I think we've got, you know, the talent is always going to be there. You know, we develop, you know, we run pretty tight practices and we push the kids. So I think this year, you know, our goal is the same every year. You know, we want to play in the last game of the season every year. You know, we want to play under the lights that Saturday night, wherever it is, roll the ball out, blow the whistle, and see what happens.
Yeah, just kind of echoing what Rob was saying. With the lost 2020 season, you know, going into summer, it was just a matter of just trying to get guys to gel, you know, try to find, you know, the next guy that's going to, you know, take the place of, you know, a Seamus Foley. Just to name one of our 2020s that, you know, has gone on to bigger and better things here. But I was really thankful that the MSHSL gave us those like October practices, because that definitely helped a lot, just in terms of like development, It kind of gave us, you know, like a college fall ball feel, if you will, just so we can kind of install some of, you know, base schemes and base drills that they can take with them, you know, into these captains practices going into the winter. So, you know, we're not, I don't want to say like we're not going to hit the ground running in the spring, but, you know, we certainly don't have to focus as much on certain things.
Yeah. So I had last summer, I was coaching the 2023 group at Team 36, and, you know, they're rising sophomores, and you're using, you know, it's our, one of our most talented groups of kids in our program. And like the first tournament, I was like, man, these guys are playing like seventh and eighth graders. And I was like, wait, they haven't ever played like high school lacrosse. I think we had two kids that maybe played as eighth graders in their program, in their varsity program. But I was like, wait, yeah, they are still youth players because they missed a whole season. I'm usually like, okay, they've had a freshman year now. They've, you know, their coaches beat some of the bad habits out of them. They're not trying to power cradle down the middle and, you know, run through three people. And there's just a lot of that stuff. And it took a tournament to like realize that 18 yard high to highs, stick side aren't going in anymore. And so when you said that, I kind of laughed because I'm like, yeah, that it, you don't think about it. And we finally got to see what happened with a missed spring. And it like, it was crazy.
You know, what's kind of like the culture, you know, you kind of touched on a horn, you guys, you know, you guys are, and you know, everybody in Minnesota knows, you know, you guys have been competing for that last game, you know, making big pushes, you know, what's the culture and, you know, how have you built the machine? You know, I come from, you know, I have a lot of involvement in Prior Lake, so I know how, you know, a big public school has built a machine, you know, maybe through a big youth program and things with a lot of numbers, you know, outside looking in on you guys, I don't think you have a big youth program or, you know, unless it's behind the scenes underground somewhere. So, you know, how, you know, what does your machine look like and, you know, what's the culture that you guys have built over the years to, you know, have a successful program that you guys have had?
You know, and I think the big thing about our culture is we're really big on accountability. You know, it starts there, you know, and it starts with Sean and myself at the top. You know, we talk all the time about, you know, the All Blacks mentality of, you know, sweeping the sheds. Leaders got to be willing to put in and do all the difficult work. So, you know, if we set that mantra from the top down that we will go to pick up balls and we will do, you know, some of these activities that traditionally you might have the kids doing or captain's parents doing, the kids see a sense of pride. They say, hey, well, our coaches are being accountable to our program. They're providing us with all these opportunities. They take it amongst themselves to really grow within that mindset. And I think the other thing is, you know, we talk about it a lot, you know, the concept of, you know, family and, you know, band of brothers and those things, you know, lacrosse is such a tight knit community, nationwide, even that when you have the opportunity to be something special within your own little community, it can drive even deeper connection with your players. We let our guys have personality. We let them do some things that they really want to do. And we really have open dialogue. So it's a trustful relationship. So, you know, yeah, we work hard, you know, a lot of the similar things that people preach within their cultures of, you know, we want to compete hard. We want to, you know, be a fast playing team or whatever it might be. But for us, it really just starts with accountability and we just kind of build off of that. You know, every team is different every year that we get, you know, you can't coach the 2019 group the way you coach the 2020s, but I know our culture is firm. You know, we're doing things the right way. I mean, we have alumni coming back and showing up to our dome practices, you know, and I get texts from them all the time, you know, like, man, do I miss this? You know, and that's how I know we've got the right culture.
Yeah.
These guys back and just watch. You want to go stop in at a dome and just see how the boys are doing and spend 5 minutes with them and let them know, like, hey, nobody's got it better than us. You know, you have all the opportunities in front of you laid out by your coaching staff. You need to seize this opportunity. You need to come together, be accountable to one another, work hard, be empathetic to those around you and those you're playing against. And then really, that's really where it started for us. Sean?
Yeah, I mean, I distinctly recall like the first couple of years that, you know, we were part of the program, we had like RTO printed on shirts. It's for Restore the Order. basically saying that, like, in the past, Pinellas been a championship team. And, you know, when we took over, it had kind of fallen on, I don't want to say hard times, but they weren't, you know, necessarily competing for those championships, like, year in and year out. So that was a really big thing for us, like, letting guys know about their past and how great they once were and what do we have to do to get back to that level once again. So yeah, we are super competitive in practice. You know, we continually say, you know, that iron sharpens iron. We're pretty critical in practice too, just because, you know, like, we demand a lot of our guys, but just know that, you know, I may be chewing a guy out, but you know that at the end of practice, like, he's going to get a hug, or like, I'm going to put my arm around him and just let him know that, hey, tomorrow's a new day. We're going to get, you know, we'll get past this. We'll get going. Like, we'll always get better. That kind of a thing.
You know, and Sean brings up a great point with that about, like, the emotions, right? We are an emotional program. Like, and I think that that's my fault for good and bad in some situations. I cry a lot. The boys see me cry. They hear me say the love word every day. You know, they understand who I am from a personal level. And I think that that really allows us to build really tight bonds with our guys within our program. And I think that makes us, you know, successful, you know, in most games and in most days, you know, and then we can pull back to those emotions, those deep bonds, and they can kind of carry us through when times get difficult.
What, you know, what tactically do you guys do? You know, are you guys big film guys? Are you guys big, you know, scheme guys, you know, analytics, or, you know, what, you know, well, is there any secret sauce you guys are pouring on the lacrosse balls over there? You know, what, you know, what's, you know, what do you guys got in that department?
Well, PMAC, you know, I think you know me better than most. In most equations, we just want to sit on the ball, you know, slow it down.
Well, that's obvious. You want to love the ball and have a 10-minute possession before you shoot it, you know. That's why we need the shot clock in high school. Who would have thought?
No, I look at every day our practice is an opportunity to get 1% better, and it's a test. You know, we have a lot of players in our program that have aspirations to play at the next level. And I use our program at the high school level as a litmus test for some of those guys that have those aspirations. You have to be able to pass my test to move on to the next phase. You know, and, yep. And our test isn't easy, as Coach said. You know, sometimes we can get loud. You know, we can push buttons with guys to really get them moving forward. But from, like, a systematic and a scheme portion, like, look, I don't think anybody – well, we're not, like, opening up the coat here and telling things to people that they are unaware of. Like, yes, we are very scheme oriented. I mean, we might practice things for just one team for a given day and then scrap it and move on to the next opponent and pull things in and out. You know, Sean is a master. You know, he allows our offense to take a lot of risks in certain situations, or sometimes, you know, he allows us to, you know, to play a little bit slower in a couple situations against really talented teams where we don't want to get in a shootout with them. We don't want to get in an up and down match with some of these teams just due to athletes. So, you know, we will be really systematic, but we do, you know, I think we, over the years, we've done a lot with film. We do a lot of, you know, virtual playbooking with our guys. All of our guys have access to our YouTube type of created videos. We do these slide deck videos for playbooks for the boys, and they have them year after year after year. So that way they can watch what we're going to be installing that day before they come to practice and at least have a good understanding of what we're going to be executing. But yeah, I think we do a lot of film. You know, we try to change things up based off our personnel. And, you know, Sean and I will be the first to admit, we'll try something and we'll be like, oh my gosh, that was a bad idea. We'll just throw it away, or we'll put it in our back pocket for, you know, a different group of kids that can execute.
Any you know, good stories or examples of that where you're just like, holy smokes, we messed up?
You know, yeah, here's a great example. I think that our first time back in the state championship a couple years ago when we were playing Egan, you know,
yeah,
we thought that maybe we could, you know, outpace them. It just wasn't as, you know, that was a track and field team running up and down the field playing lacrosse
with no rules. They don't have a playbook.
you can't script, you can't script the defend chaos, right? And that's really what it is. So, you know, in that game, we were like, look, we got to get a lead. We got to stay ahead, or we got to go for goal with them. And we weren't really that team all year, really.
No one else in Minnesota is.
Yeah, right. So I think that's a situation where we came out of that scenario. You know, we were still running D middies at that time, right? We left that game that night. I think John and I on the bus on the right way back, and we say,
never again.
Monday at practice, no more D middies in our program. Everybody must be a two-way player, right? You lose so much in the transition aspect of the game. I like, you don't have to be the best shutdown guy. We'll put you on the guy that we think that's not going to be the initiator. We'll play to your strengths. But yeah, that became a big, you know, fundamental change in our program coming out of that. You know, all of our guys have to go both ways, you know, from now on. And plus, we're a smaller school, so it kind of helps in that regard. I don't know, Sean, do you have any other examples? That's the big one.
I mean, that's the big one. I mean, like, Egan was a team of destiny that year. Like, no one could keep up with them. But I mean, we've tried stuff in practice, you know, just various like junk defenses. It was like, well, there's no way in hell that this is ever going to work. But, and we just kind of put it on the back burner for the next day. But I'm a huge film rat, as Rob kind of said. Like, I will devour film. I will stay up late, you know, with the home office here with like multiple screens, just really diving in and like scouting. Personally, like, you know, to give like a little peek behind the curtain, like when I'm looking at a team, I try to find, you know, what are the top three sets or plays that they like to run above GLE? What are the top three sets or plays that they like to run below GLE? Or it's like east, west, something like that. And then, you know, like just try to make them play left-handed, take that away. All right. Mm-hmm. We've now removed that. What else can you do? So that's big on me. Just like regarding like defensively, like as a culture, we've had some extremely talented individual defenders. But at the same time, like not every single one of our defensive players is going to be an All-American or All-State. So I really preach on like off-ball consistency to basically, you know, help balance out that on-ball inconsistency or unpredictability. Because, you know, if you're playing in the rain, a kid's going to slip. I mean, are we in a position to help him out? You know, if we have our face-off guy, you know, on the defensive end, we'll probably have to slide a little bit faster to him too. So just little things like that. So we really harp on off ball. And again, like just a huge film rant. Like I keep our scouting reports going back like the last 5 years, just because, you know, with coaching stats that change or early in the season, we don't have film. I can like reference, you know, like, all right, this is something that Kennedy and Jefferson did last year when we played them. We can probably expect something similar to that again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think our scouting report process is one of those things. I mean, I'm surprised our wives let us talk and stay up as late as we do and watch film. Like there is many a nights in the spring where it's 1:15 in the morning. I text Sean, are you awake? Of course I am. I'm still watching film. Okay. I'm on my third rewatch. Did you watch this clip at XYZ time? You know, like we probably have lost more production in the next day because of the late nights with film. But the scouting reports is something that we spend a lot of time with. That we want the kids to like walk out on that field and say, okay, we still have to go, you know, compete, you know, the game is the test, but you're giving us 90% of the answers based off of your best educated guess of, you know, of what we're going to see. You know, then we just kind of make the adjustments around, you know, if there's something different than what we kind of gave them.
Do you guys have like a 5-page packet scouting report, like college style? Like I knew who my matchup was, what the kid was going to do. And I don't know if you knew Jeff Turner. He was our D coordinator. I was more prepared for, as you called, the test. I knew what my guy was going to do. And the scary thing about him and his film nuttiness was they would call a timeout and he knew what they were going to run out of the timeout. And he was usually right.
Yeah, I think early on, they were way too long, right?
They
were way too detailed. And then, but we kind of cater them to the kids that we're coaching within that given group, right? We have a really analytical group, a really cerebral group who wants like all the information. They want to know everything. We'll give them everything. And then we'll have some groups that are like, you know, perfect example, coach, don't tell us, you know, he's a solid goalie. just tell us where to shoot. Yeah. Right. Because you start to tell high school kids, hey, he's a good goalie. The next thing you know, they get a little timid. You know, they start gripping that stick a little bit tighter and they just don't want to take the shot when they have it. You know, so there are a little, some nuances that will kind of flex in, flex out based off the kids. We've tried to trim them down as best we can, but we do give them to them.
There's still like four pages. But.
and then we take that and then it's up on the board the minute, you know, on game day. Right. Like not the document, like we will rehandwrite everything and re-go through the scout before we go out on the field again, you know, so they have seen it all day. They've had the opportunity to read it. We talk about it again in a formal discussion and then we go execute.
Yeah. You know, you talked about kind of at the beginning of this discussion about accountability, and it's one thing to have, you know, coach, a kid goes out, what was you as a coach was, you said was going to happened. And the player or players didn't anticipate it or didn't do the right thing. It's one thing to have coach be like, hey, why didn't you read the scouting report? I told you that was going to happen. Are the kids referencing that? Like, are your captains and like your leaders saying like, hey, bud, like, you know, that was in the scouting report that, you know, you knew that was coming if you would have read it. Like, are they holding each other accountable from each other with the scouting report? Or, I mean, with anything, but specifically that.
I would say, yeah. I mean, we hear their conversations, right? Yeah. We see them walking around the locker room with them. Some of the guys are printing it up. Some of them put it on their phone, however we give it to them. We're hearing them, you know, when they, you know, we have a no phones in the locker room policy, right? If your phone is out in the locker room, it better be with a scouting report or you're listening to music. You know, that's our sacred space, right? That's our one time that we get to, like, we only get to do this so many times, guys. We get maybe 13 games in a regular season, and then whatever happens in sections and everything else, those days aren't promised. So these 13 games, we want to make those game days about us, inclusive and special in our group. So we put phones away with the exception of scouting reports. And then we hear those conversations take place. You know, we see guys reviewing them on the bus, you know, an upperclassman pulling a younger guy in and having a conversation about something if they don't quite understand it. You know, sometimes we'll hear guys, you know, we'll be playing teams and very similar situation, P-Mac, like what you said with Turner, you know, being able to call the, he knows what's going to be running the huddle. Sometimes our guys are basically, you know, if we hear a team call something out from the sidelines, 90% of the time you'll hear our starting goalie or a close defenseman or a midfielder say, hey, this is what they're doing. Remember, this is that, you know, heavy sweep over the top, with a quick pick from the crease with a pop off the backside, guys. Remember the action, watch the motion, you know, like, so yeah, it's good that they are being accountable to it because, you know, they know if we're spending the time that it matters to us. And therefore, you know, they want to showcase their abilities well for us too. They want to keep playing because there's a lot of talented guys right behind them that are ready to step up and show that.
Yeah.
Sean, anything else that you notice from the guys with whenever we give those novels to go through?
I mean, the big thing to your point is that accountability. And like, I mean, we know when you haven't read the report. like we can see it on your face. We can see it in your play. It's like, I know you didn't read what we, you know, spent, you know, X amount of hours, like crushing film for. So, I mean, they'll hear it from us, but at the same time, to Rob's point, like they're going to hear it from their teammates too. I mean, in the past we've had goalies, you know, Keller and Buzz, like they knew the tendencies of every single offensive player. And, you know, if they needed to, let's just say, chip in and, you know, help out, you know, a midfielder that's on the defensive end, like, hey, he's a lefty. He's like, all right, thanks. I may have forgot that in the report, but at least Keller's got my back to let me know that. But yeah, I mean, the big thing is just that accountability that, you know, that this team has instilled in everyone. And that's coming from our upperclassmen as well. I mean, this summer and fall, you've had eighth graders and ninth graders come into the program. And they just kind of get ingrained in this, and they know that, you know, when they're coming to a Benilde St. Margaret's practice, like, buckle up because you're going to be in for a ride here. So that's pretty much it.
Yeah, we had a group of Benilde kids in here doing some shooting and stuff and some training. And one of the kids, I won't mention his name, but he did say something. He's a sophomore. So he's like, yeah, last year I came into that first. I think I'd asked him about how the dome practices were going or whatever. And he's like, yeah, last year I came to that first one and I had no idea what I was about to get into. So he's like, I'm much more prepared now to be ready to go. So it's even cool to hear that, you know, the guys are aware of it, even in like a kind of an off season captain's practice. There's no coaches there, but like that same energy, it seemed, at least from what they were saying, it seemed like, you know, it gets brought to the table for off season skills and stuff like that. But yeah, no, I think it's no surprise, obviously, that, you know, you guys are successful. I think, you know, you combine talent with, you know, being prepared and having accountability, and you get success. I mean, that it doesn't need to be, what do they say? It's simple, but it's not easy, right? It's like, you know, it's a simple game. I say that to my guys all the time. I'm like, you just do the five things we ask you to do, and you're going to probably win 90% of the time. But, you know, most of the time they try to, you know, go on, do their own plays and their own system. And, you know, and that's, you know, part of club ball too. And that kind of brings me into kind of, I wanted to talk a little bit about recruiting, but both of you guys are really involved in, or were involved in, club lacrosse, at one time, maybe more so in the past than you are now. You know, Rob, I'll start with Rob. Obviously, you were running Minnesota Elite a few years ago, and in my opinion, you were kind of the first one to be running a full-scale kind of year-round club elite team, as opposed to just like an all-star team that went to one tournament, you know, get a group of guys mm-hmm. practice. So, you know, what was your experience doing that before kind of where we are now, where, like, you know, every community seems to have a club team now. It's much different now than it was then.
Yeah, I think back then, you know, and back then, it isn't really that long ago, realistically. you know, it was about, you know, we first started off, right, with one team. You know, you had to be the best of the state of Minnesota to make this one team. And we would take that one team to multiple East Coast showcase events. And we'd see how they do. And that's how we started to really move the needle. And then as we started to have success and kids started to get opportunities to move on to the next level, we saw the need to go, okay, we need to open up, you know, the curtain here a little bit more. We need to, you know, start to fill the funnel. There's coaches are starting to ask for younger kids. We need to start getting younger kids out here to kind of fit what they were asking. So then we started to, you know, go down to we never went below the rising freshman level. You know, to be totally honest, I didn't really gravitate towards youth lacrosse traveling out of state at that time. Now I'm clearly an old dinosaur in that mindset because everybody's going everywhere all the time. But that was just kind of my mantra. I was like, you know, at that age, you know, those kids need to develop. They need to be kids. You know, they need to play with their teams and their classmates and their communities. And if they get an opportunity to do something like that, well, that's great. I just don't want to deal with it. To be really honest, it's hard. It's hard enough to, you know, take 90 guys, you know, three teams of 30-ish, whatever, you know, to Baltimore summer kickoff and chaperone 90 kids with six coaches. But we did it, you know. And by doing it at that level, I got to keep the parents at home. You know, that was really nice. I could tell the parents, hey, trust me, I've got them. You can come and watch. You don't even have to stay at the same hotel. We have it all covered, which is really kind of nice, right? We didn't have to worry about, you know, having a team manager for this or that, or, you know, parents came. It was great to have that support and help. But, you know, and then now moving forward to kind of where we are now within the state, you know, it's a relationship-based industry. You guys know it. You know, recruiting, that's what, you know, you build relationships over the years. You develop a lot of trust with guys at the coaches level. And you stay up with those guys as they move around the country. And that's how you continue to help kids, you know, get to where they want to go. Like, there's a lot of college lacrosse programs out there, right? You know, Division III, II, I, MCLA, the other club league. And I'm sorry, I don't know what the acronym is on it right now, so I apologize to those players. But, you know, my business partner who I used to run Minnesota Elite with, you know, she was a mom, she started the team for her sons, you know, to get exposure, to see, okay, can the Minnesota's best go compete with those guys? And the mantra that she always instilled in me, and I think I've said it to the point now that it's been, you know, other people have heard it enough and it's kind of spread its way out. And I kind of credit her with the mantra of, it's a 40-year decision, not a 4-year decision, right? go to the place that is going to set you up for the life that you want to live after you graduate. Don't just choose a place just because you're in love with lacrosse, you know? And that's kind of how, you know, I decided that during that process, I was going to advise those families all the time. You know, sometimes I tell parents, I don't think the school's a right fit for your son. I think your son will be back in 6 months. And yes, sometimes they said, you know what, we want to chase the NCAA acronym coach and we're just going to go do it anyways. And sure enough, some kids came back. Some kids didn't.
Yeah.
Great. We're happy for them. But that's kind of how it all kind of went. And yeah, I mean, I've been involved with other clubs, whether it's all 13s or, you know, helping out with other organizations. And, you know, I enjoy, you know, just getting out, seeing the country, traveling with a great group of kids, trying to help them. You know, yeah. I just like to help people.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's why I did it for as long as I did.
Yeah. And Sean, I know, like, you, we've crossed paths when you've been with multiple clubs and, but one thing I ran into to you in the airport, I don't know if it was last summer or 2 summers ago, but you, yeah. So you were, yeah. You had kind of an interesting setup because you were coaching club, but you weren't coaching for a Minnesota club. It seems like, you know, everybody's like, you know, high school coaches got their high school team and their club team that they're affiliated with or whatever. But yeah, you were working with Juice Cherries out of Michigan, and Coach Garland, who's out there, used to be here. I actually have never met him. It's surprising through all the connections I've never met him. But, you know, so Juice Cherries, you can talk a little bit about it, but it, you know, from my perspective, it's sort of kids are playing on local club teams, but then they also play for that as sort of an extra, you know, kind of an all-star kind of setup, or is that how it works?
So you a little bit. So how I got involved with Juice Cherries, to your point, Chris Garland, who I consider one of my closest friends and a mentor. He basically kind of called me up out of the blue one day and said like, "Hey, you want to coach club lacrosse?" And I was like, "Well, you know, it's been a couple of years. I'm not really sure." It's like, "Well, you know, it's a great group of kids. You know, it's out in Michigan." I was like, "Hold on a second. It's like Michigan.
it's like, a longer drive than Champlin Park."
it's like, you know, I still live in Minnesota, right? It's like, "Yeah, I know." It's like, "You'll just like come out for training camps and then like the events." It's like, "Okay, like I'll see what this is about." So flew up into Detroit. Absolutely. I've been there, you know, a dozen times now, coached there for 2 years. But Ted, to your point, I mean, they do still play for their high school programs, but the Juice Cherries pull from all over. So they're pulling a lot of kids from Michigan, Indiana, some from Illinois, a little bit from Wisconsin. So yeah, a little bit from Canada too, just because with like Windsor, just right across,
yeah,
you know, the border there.
You need a lefty on every team, so
you need a strong lefty that can go to the rack. but Ted, to your point, I mean, you know, they're putting together, you know, really, really solid teams from, you know, multiple states and, you know, including Canada, and they're going to these tournaments. They typically bring, you know, two teams, you know, a red and a white, although I believe now they've gone to, like, they still have the Juice Cherries, but now they also have Great Lakes Lacrosse Club, which is sort of like what used to be the white team, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. Chris, I may get a text from Chris saying like, "You got it all wrong here," but I absolutely loved it. I would definitely do it again, just not anytime soon with the 4 month old.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I love my time out in Detroit, ate a lot of Coney dogs. but yeah.
You ever eat at Slow's?
Didn't eat at Slow's. Oh. I just went
to, you're there 12 times and you can go to Slow's once?
Dude, I went to Lafayette. I went to American. All right. I didn't go to Slow's.
Yeah, that I actually wanted to ask you guys. So, like, we try to, when we do kind of our, you know, club planning for the year, obviously we want to make sure we're going to good lacrosse events. But, like, the next question is, like, all right, what food is available in these places, because that's like a factor for the coaches. Like,
huge.
After a 10-hour coaching day and 95-degree heat and humidity, it's like there's got to be something that's like we can look forward to like going to eat after. What's the best food you've had in a club tournament or a club tournament or a club game?
Yeah, that's a good. I mean, well, that's, anytime you go east, you know, and you're in, you know, anywhere on the shore, right, and you're getting, you know, cracking crabs with the boys, you're teaching them how to, you know, pop a crab open, you know, that to me is just, yeah, you know, I just love smashing crabs. You know, yeah, when we're in Baltimore, like, that's, yep, my thing. Like, I don't, that's it. And then, you know, occasionally there's this little place that I used to always take the staff out after hot days at Hotbeds, right? And, you know, it's a little known place. I just always go back to Buffalo Wild Wings. I tell you what, guys, as funny as that might be,
it's consistent.
Yeah.
I know what I'm getting, you know. So like that's my crutch when we're on the road. If it's like, okay, I can't find anything, there's too many choices, let's just go to B Dubs and I'll buy and we'll take care of the guys. You know?
Yeah. It is kind of funny. Cause it's like, oh, it's the Baltimore tournament, but then you're not in Baltimore. You're like 40 miles, yeah, away from it. Like it's in a suburb, but they're not going to call it like, you know, whatever the suburb of Baltimore is like.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you know, we found that like, we've been like, oh, we're excited, we're going to this tournament in this city. And we're like looking at places that are like downtown and it's like, that's an hour and a half away. And then we're like disappointed. We end up at a Buffalo Wild Wings. So, you know, but whatever, but yeah, Sean, do you have like, so Coney Dogs, you obviously were a fan of, but, yeah, any other like specific places?
Crabs are right up there. To Rob's point, when I was, you know, helping with Elite, yeah, there's like this sandwich shop, like, oh, by the University of Delaware. That's so good. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it's right across from the stadium. And I would just crush subs there, like every single day.
Like, it's your typical East Coast, you know, deli, right? Like, it's like there's a deli counter. They have like the world's biggest menu. Right, you can get the most amazing Italian sub, and I'm always like, yeah, I should just get the 6 or 8 inch. I'm like, nah, give me the biggest thing you got. And, you know, you eat 8 pounds of meat, and then you go stand on 90 degree heat. It's probably not the best decision.
Yeah, just have the meat sweats for like half the day.
But I'll find the name of that place and send it over to you.
Yeah, yeah. I remember at Duluth when we were in Texas for nationals or the national tournament. And there was, so we were in a suburb called Addison, a suburb of Dallas called Addison, Texas. And their slogan was the most like bars and restaurants per capita or per square mile or something like that. But there was a burrito place called Freebird, and they had, so, you know, it was very much like a Chipotle where you get to, you know, pick your meat, pick your vegetables, rice, all that. But they didn't just have one size. They had a foot long burrito.
What?
Yeah, like, and it was built like a Chipotle burrito, but it was a foot long. And one of the guys on the team, Wilson Chung, if you remember him, who's a goalie, he was like, yeah, I'm going for it. And like, you know, no chance, like nobody, not even, you know, the biggest guy, you know, could handle that. But I haven't been back to Texas since, but I'm like, if I ever go back there, I have to go back in and kind of be like, am I remembering this all right? Like a foot long burrito, like who can order that? Like everything's bigger in Texas, right? You know, we're, yeah, driving. We're like, oh, who plays there? And like, that's a church, you know, it's like, and so it's just, but a foot long burrito, I'm like, that could just be bad news.
I think you stumbled on something here, Ted, is, you know, and I saw in your guys's, one of your guys' social medias from a couple weeks ago when you're out doing meat challenges, and I think Goltz might have thrown in the towel on whatever he was eating.
Yeah, yep.
Right? But I think you might have just laid the groundwork for the new lacrosse, you know, club coaches challenges while you're on the road.
Yeah.
Right? We got to go do eating challenges. Like, we got to rotate through. Everyone's got to pick one a night. And
yeah,
whoever finishes, let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, just like club lacrosse is for players, there's an experience part of that outside of lacrosse. I think, you know, we've always talked about this. Like, we want our coaches to have a good time doing it. We pay them, but it's not a full-time job. Like, they're giving up summer weekends, you know, important weekends to come and be with these kids and coach, and they're really invested. So it's like, if we can make something fun out of the weekend experience, and like everybody likes to eat, and like, you know, the challenge makes it, now you get like competitive coaches now challenging each other and how much they can eat.
Especially a bunch of like lacrosse guys that could, that'd be good content too.
Yeah, that's good content. Yeah, we should definitely do that.
What do you tell kids, you know, what have you seen colleges and college coaches, you know, looking for, and, you know, just a quick, you know, you can dive as deep as you want into it. But, you know, I know we could do a whole episode on it.
You know, it's changed dramatically year over year. But there's like two things that always stay the same. right? Number one question, what are their grades? Right? Like, that's it. That's your first non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Right? Like, can you get into my school or not? Right? And the second thing is, how is he as a person? Right? No coach wants to recruit a headache. Right? They're putting their trust into you as a coach to be honest, to be transparent, you know, to be accountable, right? There comes that A word again, you know, because if you send a kid out away and he doesn't have a good experience, whatever the reason might be, that could come back on you. So, you know, I really try to put kids through the gate process. I'm pretty open with coaches, you know, hey, great kid, great player. Here's where he needs to work on some issues, you know, from a maturity standpoint, you know, he needs to become a better communicator. You know, if a coach calls me back and says, you know, Rob, I just wasn't feeling it, I could probably pick out the four things that he was exactly talking about. Let me guess, you had a lot of uh-huhs, or, you know, so there's a lot of those things that will come into the table. You know, they're going to find talent everywhere, right? That's the name. The game is so big now, you know, and we've been really fortunate, you know, to get guys in the right, in front of the right guys at the right time with great relationships and help them fulfill their dream. But I think what it comes down to, those top two are academics and person. You know, what does their character look like? You know, because they don't want to hear the coach speak, right? You know, they're paid to evaluate and coach college players, right? They know if the kid's a good player. They know if the kid needs to work on his offhand a little bit, or his first step defending a split dodge isn't as quick as it needs to be, or he opens his hips too quick, or like they see all this. They don't want to hear about that. They want to get down to the nitty gritty details. Is he the right fit for my program? And you know, I've had to be honest with guys in the past. You know, I don't like to crush dreams, but I want to be honest, right? It's my reputation on the line as well.
Yeah.
And that's important to me.
Yeah. I mean, like we'll go to the mat for some kids, but like with us, you know, defending them or advocating for them, we're also not going to be like a used car salesman and like sell a college like a false bill of goods just because, you know, to Rob's point, it's going to reflect like not just on us, but just the program as well. So, I mean, like Chris Garland, just kind of going back to him, he always says, you know, college is a match to be made, not a prize to be won. So, I mean, if you're chasing those NCAA D1 dreams, but, you know, you got a D3, you know, athletic ability, you should really start looking at D3 schools because, you know, if Syracuse hasn't picked up the phone yet, they're not going to right now.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
What are some, you know, actionable things for, because I just don't think that, you know, Minnesota kids know what to do. And I might know and Ted might know and you might know, but I think the kids and even the parents don't know, what are a couple things? And I think I have an idea, but I would love to hear what you have to say is, you know, what are a couple things that, you know, sophomores, junior, even freshmen, you know, what should they be doing now and how they can get organized and what are some action points that they can do to, you know, put themselves in a successful position?
Start your research. I think so many people, you know, start this with a shotgun approach, right? I'm going to go to this event and they're going to call me. Right? No, that's not how it works. There's so many kids there, right? If you're the best kid there, yeah, they're going to call you. But if you're kind of finding your way through the process, you need to start doing your research, right? Figure out what do you want to study? You know, if you don't know that yet and you want to go general business, start making those lists. Figure out where you want to go in the country. You know, it blows my mind that there's so many families that haven't sat down and started to just look at the research, you know, start to do their research, start to compile that data and kind of say, you know what, we went to New York City, but my kid didn't really like that. So I need to probably stay away from, you know, the Stony Brooks or Manhattan, you know, and start to process of elimination, you know, like Sean said, match to be made, not a prize to be won, and then start to build off of that. I think what can you do when you start developing that research? So it's kind of a sales funnel, right? You put the things into the funnel and now you need to start marketing yourself to those programs, whether it's film, obviously right now in this day and age, film is the best thing you can get out. And it's not just like, oh, here's my summer highlights. No, you need to chop those things up. You know, if I'm going to go sell Ted a car, right, or a piece of software or something, he's probably not going to buy the first time he drives that car or the first time he touches that software package. he's going to want to touch it, feel it, go drive something else for a little bit, come back, drive this one again. So I need to give them little pieces of data points and little pieces of film over a long period of time, right? It's okay if your film doesn't, you're not a finished product on the very first film that you send out, but the next set of film that you send them needs to show progress, right? And continue to market yourselves, not just you're at the end of your seasons, but during those seasons, during your spring season, you should be cutting up your film multiple times and sending that out every 4 games. Like, hey coach, hope your season's going well. Wanted to get you over my past 4 games. You know, now instead of them having to watch 5 minutes, they're watching a minute and a half, 2 minutes. You know, so you're able to, you know, kind of breadcrumb them along a little bit more and show them the complete body of work over a longer period of time. I think that's one of the biggest issues that we have with film these days is that, I mean, I watch them with my own kids. I watch some of your guys' kids. I watch the other kids, you know, kids who sit down and make this film. And it's like, your best plays are at the back end of this thing. You know, that's the other thing here. Show your film to people that know what good film looks like or good lacrosse looks like before you publish it, because no coach is going to watch the last 3 minutes of it. If that's where all your good plays are, put those in the front, stagger those. Like, to me, coaches know when they're watching a goal and an assist or a takeaway or a clear. You don't really need to call that out. You're probably wasting time pointing those things out on your film, right? You're like, you spent all that time putting that little watermark on the corner, when realistically, you probably should have been doing a deeper edit into the clips themselves, right?
Yeah.
I also know, you know, one of the things I've talked to coaches about over the years, like, and we all see it, right? Here's me facing off against a Harvard 24 commit, right? Like, coaches don't want to see you calling out other teams' guys. Like, sometimes it helps them get, if you're from a non-traditional area and you're able to get, you know, a point of reference, but you should only really do that with schools that you're actually in the communication process with. If you're blind flock shooting that out there, well, all of a sudden, if you want to go to one of those schools and now all of a sudden you're putting clips out there of you beating their guy and you're kind of calling out their guy, they don't really like that.
Yeah.
Right? They know who the guy is. So those are just some things like off the top of my head that I would really start to target that film a little bit more. Do your research. Just say, oh, I want to play college lacrosse. So if you tell me, oh, I want to play D1 lacrosse, I'm going to say, where? What do you want to study? Yeah. What type of geographic footprint do you want to be in? What size is school? And when I get the blank stares back, I will tell them, go home and do your research, and then we'll have this conversation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Give me an idea.
Yeah.
Right? Because I'm just not going to cast a wide net. Like, nobody has time for that anymore. You know, especially with the number of kids out there. And you guys are servicing, right, a variety of kids in a variety of age groups. You probably don't have time to do all the research for them. So push that back on the kids. I also think that, you know, somebody should probably, you know, the recruiting softwares that are out there, I mean, they're great for visibility, maybe a couple exposure things here or there. I've never had to really have a kid get recruited from some of those software programs that are out there. I never did it. You know, and when people say, oh, I have this profile or that profile, I'm like, but does it work? I've never seen them work, you know, and I'm sure some guys have great success with it. But, you know, that the other thing I would say is probably stay away from some of those recruiting services that are out there that will sometimes blind solicit families. Hey, I can guarantee you I can get you 5 college coaches on the phone. Well, what's that going to cost? No, stay away from that stuff.
Yeah.
You should be able to find people in your own backyard that are more than willing to help them. Sean, I'm sorry I talked way too long about that stuff.
I mean, you pretty much hit it on like everything, but yeah. Another big thing would just be weight room, get in the weight room. I mean, we have a really hard time getting 8th graders and 9th graders in the weight room just because they're intimidated. Like, they don't know what to do. Like, when they see, you know, the senior starting defenseman, like squatting 300 some odd pounds, that's a little intimidating,
yeah.
Especially when you're coming in as an 8th grader. So definitely just try to get some, you know, some comfortability there. You know, you don't have to put up like a ton of weight, but at least start somewhere and then just progress from there, because ultimately they're looking for athletes. Like, they can coach you up, but they're looking for athletes. Are you bigger? Are you stronger? Are you faster than the guy that you're lining up across from? If so, well, maybe we'll take a chance on you.
You know, there used to be guys that used to be able to get recruited, right? And I like to call it the Randy Moss freak show factor, right? 84 was That's why they called him the super freak, right? He was longer, faster. He could out jump. He could out run. He could do everything better than everybody else on the field, right? And there was a time and a place where lacrosse coaches were recruiting those type of athletes, right? When I was growing up in Columbus, right, Upper Arlington was sending up pipeline to the University of Virginia. Brett Hughes, you know, all of these guys coming out of UVA, Koontz, like the DeSos that went on to Georgetown, and some of these guys, they were unbelievable athletes. And those guys were taking the chances on those guys really early on because they were the best athletes on the field. It was really easy to transition them into lacrosse. What you're seeing now with the way the game is developing, those freak show Randy Moss type of athletes, right? They're kind of, they're high risk for coaches now, right? Like, he's going to take up a roster spot. We've got to mold him. You know, like, what's the long-term payoff, you know, for this kid being molded from, you know, this lump of clay into a starting Division I defenseman? Well, the learning curve there is really steep. Yeah. You know, okay, I can go get this really great athlete from the state of Minnesota, or I can go to Baltimore and get a very, maybe not a great athlete, but he's a better lacrosse player with a higher lacrosse IQ, who's played against really good competition. So there's more knowns there. You know, we've had some great defensemen in this state that have been able to make that transition. You know, Carson Cannon, right? Like, he's one of the Minnesota godfathers, if you ask me, that sticks out in my brain of going, you know what? He was that guy. He was the Randy Moss freak show guy. Right? Like, fastest, longest wingspan, was able to transition. Nick Walsh, right, from Woodbury, he went to High Point. Used to hear from Coach Torpy all the time. Robbie's a ball of clay, but he was able to figure it out. Now, some coaches are willing to take those risks on some of those guys, but more and more as the game is growing, kids are playing at a younger age. They're getting more skilled, right, from a younger age and on. I'm starting to see some of those guys not get picked up as much. You know, like, the best athlete, you might be the best athlete on the field, but you might not get a spot anymore, because you don't understand team offense, and they just don't have time anymore. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I saw that with one guy in particular. I won't call him out, obviously, but, yeah. You know, freak show, awesome weight room guy, you know, probably gets a bunch of chicks at the beach, but, you know, he couldn't figure out the playbook. So if you can combine, like, if you can get those guys to figure out the playbook and learn team defense and whatever, off-ball defense, as you guys were talking about earlier, that'd be a lethal combination. Because if you look at me, I was not blessed with any height or size or beach body whatsoever.
Yeah, I had a motor, though.
Yeah, but that was a fact. You understood the game. You were great off the ground, right? Like, there was things in your style that fit the program that recruited you.
Right, right? Yeah.
I think it's a good thing to say is, you know, everybody thinks that they always want, like, the 6'5" guys who can run like deer. Well, you know, yeah, you're right. There's an ACC defenseman, you know, kind of mold out there, and those guys want those type of guys, right? And we all understand that. But if you're not an ACC level defenseman, you maybe don't have the grades, or maybe you're not quite as skilled as some of those other guys. It can get very, very difficult, you know, because what we're seeing across the country is, there are other areas where there are very elite athletes that are also now becoming more and more skilled. Yeah. Just look at California, right? Like, that's a hotbed, period.
Yeah.
Right. And they're on the opposite end of the world from where the lacrosse capitals are.
Yeah.
Well, why is those kids are not only great athletes, they're extremely skilled. And that's the differentiator for those guys in the Midwest kids, right? We've got great athletes. We got to continue to increase the skill level here.
Do you think the weather's holding us back? I'm coming up with excuses now. You know, is the weather holding us back? You know, we have go ahead. Like, I'm just looking for ideas. Like, yeah, they can probably play 364 days a year.
That's just it. Because, I mean, like, a lot of football coaches, like D1 guys, they recruit speed states. So it's Florida, Texas, California. Because to your point, PMAC, like, it's warm all the time. I can go outside and catch 100 balls, no matter what time of day it is, no matter what season it is, because it's always going to be 70 and sunny.
Yeah.
With that being said, you know, if you're here in Minnesota, I mean, yeah, domes are sparse. They're expensive to rent for some teams, but at the same time, if you got, you know, a spare $200 to buy a bounce back, or you can find a brick wall in your town. I mean, I know wall ball has been, like, preached, like, up and down for, I mean, since we picked up a stick for the first time, but I mean, like it's effective when you want to get like decent, you know, stick skills, if you will. And now it may not be game specific or drill specific, but you know, if you can't pass and catch, you can't play. It's as simple as that.
You're not wrong.
And then just, you know, when it comes to, you know, if you're locked inside, whether it be during a pandemic or a February winter in Minnesota, like invest in a squad.
Or April winter?
Yeah. Well, our winters are a pandemic. You could make that argument.
Yeah. So, I realize that gyms are closed and stuff, but I mean, like Amazon, like get a couple of dumbbells, you know, do what you can, do some bodyweight stuff, you know, stay active if you can. Yeah.
And I mean, you guys know, like the players you've coached over the years, there's always a way, there's always being resourceful, you know, men have resources, but you have resourcefulness. And you've had the players, we've had them where it's like, it doesn't matter if it's 20 below outside, doesn't matter if it's snow, there's no excuse. They're going to find a way to get something done. And then there's, you know, the other side of it, there's the guy or the gal that will find an excuse and not get it done. You know, it's never perfect conditions or whatever. So, you know, I think that's a great point is like, you know, hey, there's always something you can be doing. And you know, there's guys that have been inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame who've only done pushups and sit-ups. So like, let's, you know, and Goltz always says this, he's like, until you've exhausted every option that you have, I don't want to hear your excuse. Like, it's just like, you know, well, could you do pushups and sit-ups? Oh, I haven't tried that yet. Okay, well then I don't want to hear it, you know? And so that's the teacher in him just being like, I think he's just like lost all patience for like excuses. It's just like, you haven't gone all the way down the list yet. And so you don't have an excuse to not get the job done. But that, yeah, I think, you know, okay, we don't have great weather, but okay, we can figure something else out. But yeah, no, I think those are all great points, things that we, you know, we echo here, but some new stuff too. So hopefully our listeners are, you know, listening to this and, you know, recruiting is such a big thing and it's daunting to people. There's not a lot of transparency, I don't think it's like of malintent. I just think that everybody's process is different. Every kid is different. Every family's different. Everybody's budget's different, all these things. So, you know, the research, like you said, is really important and becoming a better athlete and making sure you're taking care of your grades because, you know, you want to keep as many doors open as possible as you can by the time you get, you know, to your junior year. So, yeah, we appreciate you guys, you know, diving into some of that stuff. And, you know, we've gone over an hour now. So I think, we'll kind of wrap it up. I sent you guys this question, but we ask everybody kind of what's your alley. We call our podcast Down the Alley, and this is more of just an open-ended question, and it could be anything. And I know you guys both have little ones at home, so it could be fatherhood, it could be being a high school coach, recruiting, anything. But you know, what is your alley and something you're into recently?
Sean, I'll let you go first on this one.
Yeah, sure. Teddy kind of touched on it. Being a dad's like really, really awesome. Just, I mean, he's 4 months old. Like he just started to roll over now. And it's amazing. I mean, he's going to be crawling, you know, God knows when. So we have to start baby proofing sooner rather than later. But just seeing like this little tiny human just develop and just explore the world is awesome. But outside of that, like I'm a huge reader. Like I typically consume like 2 books at a time just because, you know, I think John Wooden said the quote, like if you're through learning, you're through. So, really big into, books about culture, about leadership. One book that I would recommend, it's called The Inner Game of Tennis. It's by Timothy Galway. It's really old, but it still holds up today.
All right.
It's basically about like preparation, mental toughness, like that kind of a thing. Love documentaries, The Playbook on Netflix. I don't know if you guys have watched that. But it's like 5 episodes.
It's about the coaches, right?
Yeah.
I watched the first episode.
Yeah. So they got Doc Rivers. They have Jill Ellis, who was the women's national team coach for U.S. soccer.
That was the one I watched. Super good.
Yeah, super good. So, I mean, I highly recommend that just because it gives like their life lessons or like their, you know, things that they've learned in their coaching journey. Really, really like that. So anything book or documentary related to coaching, leadership, just bettering yourself, I'm all about that.
Yeah. So you have 1 hour. Are you going to watch film or are you going to read a book?
Okay. Let's put it this way. Is it game film about an opponent? Is it a documentary or is it
game, game film?
Okay. I'm picking game film.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
I think for me, you know, in dovetailing off of Sean there a little bit is I am like a student of coaching, right? I love to learn from other coaches. I'll be the first to admit that I'm not a big, you know, energy bus, John Gordon book type of guy. I want to read from people that have and learn from people and read what their words that are doing it every day, you know, and not just in lacrosse, right? I think a lot of people that know me closely know I am a huge European soccer guy. And I think to the point that I bash Sean over the head with some of these guys that have been doing this.
Yeah, Alex Ferguson or whatever. Yeah, he sent me that book a couple years ago.
Yeah, like, you know, Fergie's books are great ones. Some of the stuff that Pep has written over the years. Like,
oh, Pep.
I buy books and I'll send them to Sean. Because it's like, I just love to Legacy is by far probably one of my favorite ones of my book club that I started a couple years ago with coaches, where I just buy some guys a book and ship it out to them. Like, I read this.
I like that.
I thought it changed, you know, my view of things. And I want to disperse this knowledge. So I like to learn from guys who have been doing it. And I also like to read, you know, the autobiographies of the guys who have been at the highest level, you know, outside of, you know, just in sports, you know, whether it's, you know, Johnny Ive's book, right? The lead developer or technical designer at Apple, just how his brain works. I read a great book by, you know, Bill McDermott when Sean and I were working at SAP, and he wrote a book about, you know, just being successful and the winning culture that he was building in his mindset. You know, those are things that kind of get me going a little bit, you know, again, to his statement earlier from Wooden, you know, you got to keep learning, you know, whether it's in your space where you're working with kids these days and you're coaching with them, you're going to be able to find ways to navigate relationships. It's going to get you through some good times and some hard times too. But just having just a wealth of knowledge to call back on is really, really important. It's something that, you know, I want to instill not only in my players, you know, those are the best conversations I have. You know, when some of the alumni text me, it's like, hey, I need a new book recommendation. What do you got? You know, Eric Weber, right? Graduating 2018, you know, he's down at the University of Dayton and he's moving, he's changing his majors and he wants to work with athletes. So he just reached out to me a couple weeks ago going, hey, give me some more books about leadership and with working with different athletes and give them to me from all across the gambit. So, you know, and I like to be able to share that knowledge with guys. So if you're out there and you want some, you know, insight on books, you know, something that maybe you never thought you would read or learn something about, feel free to reach out to me. And because this is how I kind of know that it's becoming more mainstream now to study from other people in a lot of other disciplines is I think the last time I was able to attend the MCLA convention the IMCLA convention was a couple of years ago, just due to some other commitments. I haven't been able to go back recently, but I sat in on the Air Force Offensive Coordinator talk. And he was talking about like, hey, I just started like watching and stealing different patterns from professional soccer. I was like, I think I want to sit here and talk with you for like another 45 minutes after we're done, because we can trade stories here. Because
yeah,
I've been doing that similar type of stuff for years, you know, and that's everybody steals from everybody, especially if they're extremely successful, right? You can learn a lot from other people out there. So just be a knowledge sponge, willing to go to the next level and just, you know, it might not help you with what you're doing now, but it might help you with where you want to be tomorrow.
Yeah, for sure.
On a little lighter note,
sure.
You know, you and me, you know, DM each other about barbecue at times, and you know, you're a fellow rec tech guy. You know, we don't smoke on T words, that's for sure. Sure. You know what? You know, have you smoked anything up recently? You know, what's your go to meat? Any rubs I need to take a look at?
You know, I got a really big hankering for a tomahawk the other night, and I tried to go to like five different butcher shops, and nobody's got tomahawks.
Yeah.
So then I found an amazing recipe, PMAC. I'll send it over to you for spicy German sausage.
Okay. Okay.
So I was making it homemade sausage, taste it myself.
Wow.
And found a recipe for it, and then I cooked it in a nice pan on the grill, and I was transferring it back and forth with my Oktoberfest base that I made with my hot. Oh, hey, you just saw me because we're on the Zoom, right? And I just got the chills. I could taste that bratwurst on my tongue again. But that was by far the best thing I made recently.
Awesome.
To get you the recipe.
Good stuff.
Nice. Well, guys, it's 9:30, so we'll wrap it up. I know you guys might be woken up in a couple hours, maybe if my memory serves me correctly. But we really appreciate you coming down the alley. It's awesome to have you guys on. You know, you guys run a great program, and we see it when your kids come in here. They're just respectful. They're ready to go. They work hard. All the things that we expect out of our guys. It's a pleasure to work with them, and you know, hopefully we'll be watching lacrosse this spring. So yeah.
Well thanks guys for having us, and it's great, and thank you for what you guys do in the community. You know, it takes a lot to energize communities and work with kids and support kids and families, and you guys are doing it the right way, and we're happy to do whatever we can to continue to support.
I appreciate that
you guys are doing.
Thanks.
Yeah, love talking about the game. I'll always be an advocate for you guys.
Yeah, so, thank you. Appreciate that.
Thanks for coming out.
Just yeah. That one game in May and potentially that one game in June, PMAC. Then outside of that, we
yeah,
can, absolutely. You know, no, I totally understand. You know, and
we have 2-hour buffers, right? 2-hour buffers, and then we get back together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic.
All right, guys. Have a good night. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. One more time.